Hey, Phil.
Hello.
I want to thank you first off for introducing me to two wonderful people who you met and immediately said, we need to have them on the show and we need to begin their Oscar campaign. And let me say, it would have seemed like quite a long shot when that happened. And yet, look at where we are having our, this is our Oscar lunch.
Yeah.
Our Oscar naked lunch preview of the Oscars.
Well, you're talking about Michelle Yeoh and Ke Kwan, who my friend Melvin Moore, the producer Melvin Moore, said, there's this new movie coming out. This was a year ago, called Everything Everywhere All at Once. Would you want to do it as a movie night? I could probably get Michelle Yeoh and Ke Kwan. I said, I know who Michelle Yeoh is from Crouching Tiger. Who's Ke Kwan? Oh, he was the kid in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. I said, oh, okay. I can't say I was excited because that movie was 30 years ago.
What has he done for us lately?
Well, I didn't know what happened to him, but now the whole world knows what happened because it's the subject of all the speeches he's given, winning every single award.
He's going to win more awards for the speeches he's giving this award season.
And he's so genuine and sweet. And I saw that, first of all, when you meet him, like we eat pizza before the movie, and he's just adorable and great and so down to earth and so grateful for everything that's happened in his life. And he kept saying, I'm just so happy that they found me for this movie, you know, and Michelle really went to bat for him. She, by the way, if you don't know this going in, she's probably the biggest female action star in the world, if not one of the biggest stars of any kind in the world.
Also, one of the nicest, both of them are two of the nicest people you could ever meet. Like, you had already bonded with them at movie night. I think I was away at the Grammys or something when you had that movie night.
Right.
But immediately sitting down and breaking everything bagels with them from...
What's Courage.
Courage Bagels.
The best.
They're the best. They just couldn't be nicer
people. But the movie, you know, we eat pizza, we go in, we watch the movie with, you know, our 20 guests that are there, and it blows us all away, and we can't believe it. And they talk about all the making of the movie, and I fall in love with their performances, and then them. And I ask if they want to have dinner like the next night. And we've been having dinner and getting together, and they've come to other movie nights. And I was in London a few weeks ago. It was my birthday. And I happened to be in London because I was doing the book tour show, the live show. And she's in London filming Wicked.
Oh, my
God. She's going to be in the musical Wicked. And... she said, when is your birthday? I told her, and she said, I'm going to try to be there. I said, what? This is in the middle of all her stuff, not just filming a movie, but Oscar all the season. Oscar stuff that's going on, the BAFTAs and all this. Well, I had a couple of friends from London and a couple of friends from America who were in town. They were going to meet us at Dishoom, this great restaurant and great Indian restaurant in London. And in walks Michelle with flowers and chocolate. For me, I couldn't believe it. I mean, we're not best friends. I mean, I love her to death, but we just met this year. And she shows up for my stupid birthday. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. Who does that? She's just, and I was saying to my friend Gary, this is Gary. Gary, this is the biggest star in the world. You know, everyone's jaw is dropping in the restaurant because she really is...
sensation.
A global sensation. And Ke is too. And Ke will come to lunches. You know, he's so down to earth and so sweet. But I said it that night after the movie. I said, this is the movie to beat for the Oscars. I don't think we're going to see a better movie this year. And the way everything's looking, I don't want to jinx anything. I've never said the O word Oscar to them because I'm just thrilled that they've won all the stuff they've won already. Every one of them is like a giant milestone. They're the first Asian actors to win in their categories for the SAG Awards, which just happened two nights ago. Did you know?
This movie,
I mean, they are on track. They are now not just them, but the movie is on track to be the favorite at the Oscars. I couldn't be happy.
And it's already a game changer for, like, Key will tell you, like,
yes,
he couldn't get work. He was,
that's right.
There was a period where he was just like in a room with 40 other guys trying to get two lines in a movie. And you think about, this has opened up casting. It's opened up a world
for the Asian community. It is huge. It's huge for us. But imagine having been marginalized as an ethnicity to not get work. If you heard James Hong the other night, he said, you know, they never thought we were good enough, but look at us now. So it's just so gratifying. It's so great. And they're all so deserved. Forget that they're any ethnicity. They're wonderful, wonderful actors. It doesn't matter. That's the lesson, you know?
The funny thing about that episode is you said early on in the intro, if you haven't seen the movie, stop now and then go see the movie.
And then listen to the thing.
Right. Yeah. And the funny thing is, there was like, I think the podcast company, there was research saying, don't tell people that. They stopped the episode. Now I think everyone can finish that episode if you haven't heard that whole one. But we're not here going to, we're not sharing that episode. What we are
sharing.
But you
know where that is. It's on our podcast site. So you can go and listen to Michelle and Key anytime.
And right now, we want you to listen to an episode that got, that also was a global sensation in all sorts of interesting ways. Who was that, Phil?
Oh, Jimmy Kimmel. We got to interview Jimmy Kimmel, and he made a little bit of controversial news. We won't tell you what that is. You'll have to listen to find out. But so proud of Jimmy. He's so funny always on his show. I just think he gets better and better. And he's kind of a perfect Oscar host, and we want to wish him well for the Oscars too. We know it'll be great.
Absolutely. We, in the interview, we talked about, I met him many years ago when he was writing on the Grammys together. From a humble writer on the Grammys to an Oscar host again, and I know he'll be absolutely fantastic.
Yep.
And I hope this interview, the part that sort of went viral was not characteristic of the whole interview. It really is an interview like Jimmy with a lot of, not only a lot of wit, but a lot of heart and a lot of soul. And I hope people now will give this episode another listen so that you can just fall in love with Jimmy before the Oscar night.
No, I love what he stands for. I love that he uses his platform for good, and he's not afraid. You know, the naysayers be damned. He does what he does because he believes in it.
And I'll be watching. I don't know where in the world you'll be, but I can't wait to watch it.
Yep.
Let's spill the beans, chew the fat, food for thought and jokes on tap. Talking with our mouths full, having fun. A piece of cake and humble pie, serving up a slice of life. Leave the dressing on the side, it's naked lunch.
Clothing optional.
Let me ask you about my favorite, Billy.
That's how's a good meatball.
How's Billy doing?
Billy's doing great. He's 5 years old.
Yeah.
I assume you're not talking about Billy Crystal, are you? Because he seems to be doing great too. No, I'm very showbiz
minded. He's cute too.
He's doing great. He needs to have another heart surgery, and so will I. It looks like
after this, yeah.
But it should be fine. He's had two, and they went great. And
this was pre-planned. Like you knew this was coming in his life that he would.
Now we do. No, we didn't. When he was born, we definitely didn't know. Sometimes they know. Sometimes they can tell in utero that you're going to need to have an operation. We did not know until he came out.
I mean, when that appearance, I, if you don't mind, I'd like to play a little bit of your your speech. No, it was gorgeous,
right.
And and I think it was essential and important and beautiful. Do you know what I'm talking about, David? When your son was born, he needed a little extra help, and you were so touching and sweet about the situation, and you of course expanded your little speech to include everyone and the very American problem of not having enough healthcare to go around. And I just thought it was like the absolute best use of your platform. You're using your powers for good, and you've continued to do that. And I'm just so proud to know you and I just think you're terrific.
We were brought up to believe that we live in the greatest country in the world, but until a few years ago, millions and millions of us had no access to health insurance at all. You know, before 2014, if you were born with congenital heart disease like my son was, there was a good chance you'd never be able to get health insurance because you had a pre-existing condition. You were born with a pre-existing condition. If your parents didn't have medical insurance, you might not live long enough to even get denied because of a pre-existing condition. If your baby is going to die, and it doesn't have to, it shouldn't matter how much money you make. I think that's something that, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or something else, we all agree on that, right? I mean, we do.
Well, that's nice of you to say. It's, you know, everything starts with a little germ. I'm sure you guys feel that same way. David, I'm sure you were like, right, you started writing and it became a little bigger and became a bigger part of your life. But for me, one of the things I always loved about being on the radio, where you have to fill 4.5 hours every day, was that when bad things happened to me, I could turn them into good things. Because if I ran out of gas, I knew I had a story the next day. Yep. So I got something out of it.
Yep.
So I was sitting in the hospital and I was thinking, all right, what good can we make of this? You know, there's got to be something. And then, of course, you see these people who've devoted their lives to not just helping families, because every hospital has doctors and nurses and all this, but in this particular case, these people are in there with their children, which is a different ballgame. And you have to approach people in a different way. And I was so impressed by how they did, how caring they were, not just in the ER, IU, intensive care unit, but in the elevator, you'd see it, you know, in the lobby, you'd see it.
And you're talking specifically about Children's Hospital.
Children's Hospital in LA. And I've come to learn a lot of children's hospitals as well. And one of the great things about Children's Hospital in LA is they train doctors and nurses to go to different hospitals all over the world. So it's an important place. But, I just wanted to share that. And these are not, it is open to everyone. It's regardless of what your income is.
Yep.
And you'd see these parents who probably couldn't afford to miss a day of work because they were being paid by the hour, spending their day there with their kids, and just the hardship that goes along with the grief and the worry was, it made a big impression on me.
It's just amazing, the place. I've been there. I've toured the place. We contribute, as I would encourage all of our listeners to. It's a beautiful, beautiful organization, a beautiful place. And again, equal opportunity place.
Yes, for sure.
The way the world should be.
I think people don't understand that sometimes when I talk about taking our son there. It's like, it must be a celebrity hospital.
Uh-huh.
It is not.
Yeah.
Yeah. At all. And if you have an issue, you go there.
So when did you know Billy needs now another one, another surgery? That has to be hard.
We knew at the outset, when they did the first surgery, they said he's going to need a second surgery in 6 months.
Yeah.
He's going to need an arthroscopic procedure, which he had, and then he's going to need another open heart surgery. So he'll have one more, and then hopefully that'll be it.
So the heart needs to grow
a
certain amount for them to be able to do this stuff.
Exactly.
Jimmy, I was happy to hear you talking on a podcast that, as a result of all he's been through in his young life, he's still a wild man. At least the way you described it, this has not made him a shy and retiring kid.
He's the craziest child in our family, and we've had a lot of weird kids. And I
most of them employed by you on your show, so we know, yes.
I have to say, my dad said, he said in a very serious way, he's pretty low-key. My dad goes, yeah, he's the weirdest one. And he is. He's just like... We had some friends over. They were visiting us from Las Vegas a couple of weeks ago, and they're all sitting in the living room, and Billy walks in the door, and they're like, Billy, and he gets shy, and he kind of slinks out of the room for a moment and then reemerges with his penis out to greet everyone.
Really?
Yeah.
My dad used to do that. No, that's him. No, he didn't. I'm kidding. People, calm down.
Yeah,
that was a joke for Max.
A joke about for Max. Max, yes.
And he asked me the other night, he said, are wiener dogs long? And I said, yeah, they're like a long, they have a long body. He goes, So are there farts long?
That's a very good question.
It's studied in philosophy schools around the world.
And then he asked if leprechauns have a boss. He wanted to know if it was an organized crime type of situation.
Are these all future children's books titles that you will be using?
Maybe so.
I want to tell you about when I met you, and I don't know if you remember at all.
All right.
But it was the Grammys. And my memory, do you remember like
John? Which Grammys? John was hosting?
John Stewart.
Right.
Now, did you do 1 or 2 years with John?
2. I did it twice with John.
Okay. So here's
meaning the, writing on the show.
Yeah. Yes.
Here's the story is that on, I looked this up. I never knew this. I've been working on this show for more than 2 decades, but I never actually did the research. That's the kind of reporter I am. And it turned out that I'd heard Whoopi Goldberg, I don't know if she got sick or if she had an argument with someone, but for whatever reason, she dropped out like the week or so before a show. And all I know is that John Stewart got the gig maybe a couple, like the week of the show. And Jimmy, you must have gotten a call maybe from Baby Doll. Is that your?
Yeah, John and I have a mutual manager, James Baby Doll Dixon.
Ray Romano, too.
And Ray Romano.
Yeah.
Used to be Ray's. Yeah, not anymore, but years ago.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no. John, no, actually, it wasn't through Baby Doll, even though John just said, hey, I'm coming out. And I said, do you need any help on the Grammys? And he said, yeah, sure.
So you came down there, I think it was, what happened was a Thursday night, I get a call from Ken Ehrlich saying, do you want to write a message on my machine? Do you want to write the Grammys with me? And I didn't get the message until Friday morning. I didn't even check my machine. Friday morning, I called him and I said, do you mean the Grammys that are on Sunday? He went, yes. They had.
Wow.
It was so last minute. And I drove and I went to a room with you and John Stewart and I think Adam Carolla.
I think it was maybe one of our writers, John Bynes, I think it was.
But I walked into that room and I told John Stewart, John, I'm here for you. Anything you need. I'm going to go back to the main office, but I'll be back later. And I went back in my car and drove to Santa Monica and interviewed Sting. And that was over the next couple of days. We somehow did that first year, which I looked at last night for the first time.
Oh, you did?
I watched the show.
How was it?
Well, John was great and loose because there was like virtually no script. And what I do remember is sitting back there with you and making Eminem jokes, which ended up being like because it was Elton John and Eminem were that.
Oh, yeah.
That was the year that they
were
together. And it was the theme became, I didn't know Eminem
Elton
was gay.
Elton John, very forgiving.
Very forgiving and a great moment. It was actually really great. But that was the first time I met you. I was telling John Stewart a lie and saying that I was there for him. And that's where it began.
Well, I do remember John being so relaxed about it and me being not that relaxed. I'm like, we gotta prep this. We got to go. And then the same deal the next year. John was super relaxed.
Yeah.
The next year, I don't know if you remember, we had a bit. It was the TSA was really cracking down on.
Because between year one and year two, a little thing called 9/11.
That's right. And we had a bit where John would be introduced, he'd walk out on stage, and then we'd make him go back and go through the metal detector again, and then he had to take off each article of clothing. Eventually, he was down to his underwear. It was a funnier pitch than it actually turned out to be, but we were going to hire an actor to play the TSA agent, and John, at the end, John was just like, I just want you to be the TSA agent. I was like, John, I think people are going to recognize
still
me,
notices,
you know.
I
think it's going to be confusing, and they won't understand. It'll kind of kill the beast. Like, no, nobody's going to recognize you. And so it's like, thanks. Okay, well, it was a weird double-sided compliment, and I did it, and yeah, it didn't go as well as we hoped it would go.
The director was Walter Miller, who at that point was 81 or 82 years old, and like he'd done like every comedy thing over the years, and he pulled me over. He goes, if John Stewart gets in his underwear, which is what he did get to eventually, he goes, he will never be back on the Grammy stage, which turned out to be, I think, pretty true, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they asked him.
Do you love doing the upfronts?
The upfront, for those who don't know, it's a very specific, it's like a trade show,
it
really
is, but you are ruthless.
Yeah, well.
It's hilarious.
I did it. The first year, I did it before the show came on. So I was hired at ABC, and I signed my contract at like lunch that day. And then they said, okay, you're going to be on the up, you know, up for it. I had a week's notice or so.
But you're literally hosting.
And I don't really host it. I just close it out.
It's a State of the Union where he rips everybody.
Right.
But everyone who works for ABC is there.
Yes. Not just everyone who works for ABC.
And all the advertisers are there.
Yeah, all the advertisers.
They're pre-buying spots on the upcoming fall season. That's what the upfronts are for people who don't know. And you can see your performances, I think, on YouTube, right?
I'm not sure.
How have I seen them?
There was a closed circuit. The reason Phil is asking, I think, is we worked on the opposing team. We were on the CBS.
We would work on the CBS
helping, writing jokes. And we would sit and watch yours because it would stream or whatever people, it wasn't streaming yet. It was whatever it was. There was a closed circuit thing that we would tap into because we would then cross out all the jokes that were so much better than anything.
I guess my point of the question is they're not mad at you after you do these things?
Well, it's funny because the first year I did it, I was very self-deprecating, but also I said goodbye to the president of ABC. Yeah. I said, like, you're probably going to be fired. You won't be here next year. And it turned out to be true. And just made fun of the idea that they were going after Letterman and they got me. And it went over very well. And afterwards, the president of ABC, this guy Alex Walu, who's now a good friend of mine, he said, that was great. If you'd showed me the script beforehand, I never would have let you any of those jokes. And so because it worked and because no one had nobody thought to look at what I was going to say.
Yes.
They let me do it again. And then I kept in. It became a thing. And then now it's one of those things that I have to do it whether I want to or not.
You make fun of the other networks, but you really make fun of your home network.
Yeah, you have to. I think, you know, if you're going to make fun of others, you have to.
Is it an understanding in the room from the advertisers and the network that it doesn't, the jokes really are fine. They don't matter. They're not going to affect business. We all know this is all baloney and they're going to pay anyway.
Well, I guess the idea is to entertain them for an hour and a half and they like it. So it hasn't seemed to have any practical
effect.
But
you're literally saying these shows, this one looks terrible.
Yeah, occasionally I'll single a show out. Yeah,
it's really
and
good.
Usually it's funny because it's true.
Yes, of course it's true. That's what. But
typically I won't make fun of the shows themselves so much as just like, well, now the thing is like nobody's watching us anymore. Nobody's watching network television. Even the people who are watching it on network are watching it on other platforms.
Yes.
You know, like our show. You know, people watch it on YouTube for the most part.
I watched Jimmy on YouTube this morning.
Yes,
because. This is another thank you.
Because you can't stay up late.
Exactly. A big thank you I have is in February this year, you had Ringo on, I think for the second time in a few months. And it was a big night in my life because I had helped Ringo with two books during the pandemic.
That's, right.
I spent, you know, a lot of time at his house in a mask helping him do these two books. The day he was on your show, my Aunt Linda, my parents are gone, but my Aunt Linda is the closest thing I have to a mother on earth. And she's the aunt who calls about everything and thinks you're the center of the world kind of relative.
Yeah.
And she called me and she goes, I'm going to watch Ringo on Jimmy Kimmel. Do you think he'll mention you? And I'm like, Aunt Linda, there is no save yourself some sleep. There's no chance that Ringo, I didn't even take a credit like as a co-author in the book because I know it's going to sell more if my name's not on it. Let it be Ringo and then he can thank me inside and all. But you, out of the kindness of your heart, which is comes through in everything you do, like he's talking and you said, Ringo, you did this book with the great David Wilde. The great writer. I got two greats in one sentence. And my aunt, like, fell over. It literally was the happiest moment in her life. And so thank you for somehow contriving to make my Aunt Linda happy.
Well, I meant never it. Would. And, you know, if I can make Aunt Linda happy, that's all I ever could all ask for.
It's all about Aunt Linda.
I know the reality of how that works. You did a lot of work on that, you know, and it was really good. And you deserve to be mentioned.
Well, he was great with you. Like,
he's so great.
He's the greatest personality. He's so loose.
Yeah.
It's like, I did not anticipate my name being mentioned and a fart joke. Like you showed the fart from Get Back, which I'm not a fan.
Should have expected from me. Yeah. That one you should have seen coming. Even Aunt Linda should have known that.
It is the best moment in the whole thing.
It is great.
In the six episode. Well, how long is that? Get Back?
It's 38 hours. It's longer than Shoah. a similar sort of documentary.
But there's more laughs in show.
Exactly.
But the fart joke.
Well, Jimmy pulled it right out. I don't know how you cleared that. It's like you call Apple. It's like, yeah, can we have the 10 seconds of gas being passed by a beetle?
Well, I think that was, that was a Disney thing, right?
Yes.
So
it's okay.
Yeah, we can, you know.
But how cute is it to have a beetle just say, I farted?
That's the thing about being Ringo or Paul McCartney. Everything you do is interesting. Like, yeah. I mean, it's like, everybody is interested. Like, you know, I could ask Ringo, like, how many times a day do you brush your teeth? And the answer would be interesting to me no matter it was.
Like, don't you want to ask him, what did you eat on the road? What was your favorite go-to, like, snacks?
Well, Jimmy, you did talk about that. Like, the fact that they, and in the book, it was something that fascinated me. They shared rooms. Like, for the touring years.
Like brothers.
They had to pair up. It's like they didn't splurge for a suite for each one of them.
I love that stuff.
Yeah.
That went on in sports for a long time, too, until not so long ago. You'd have guys making $10 million a year who were
bunking in,
sharing a room at the Hyatt, you know?
Hilarious.
See, I do a thing where whenever I go to a city, I try to see if the Beatles stayed there when they were touring, and I try to stay at those hotels. And it's always amazing how they're not the greatest hotels. Like, CBS for the Upfront put me in the same suite where the Beatles were for Ed Sullivan the second time.
Because it was cheap.
The place I stayed in Seattle, my wife is still pissed off.
Which one was there. Which restaurant? Which hotel?
It was the Warwick. They stayed at the Warwick the second time, and I always ask for the Beatles room. The one in Seattle I stayed at, which is this weird hotel on the water, you have to pay extra to get the Beatles
room. Oh, really?
And they have a few pictures. But it's a great, you know, I just
there's a room in at a hotel in Seattle that Led Zeppelin stayed in. And
where they fished out.
Yeah, they were fishing out. Yeah.
I got to stay in Montreal at the Fairmont in the suite where he had John and Yoko had a bed in.
Oh, the bed.
And the room is kind of half museum. But they let me stay in it.
How cool.
It's very cool.
No, I haven't done a tremendous amount of traveling, you know, just because of my job. I never really had
a
lot of time off.
You like to go and fish.
I like to go fish, fly fishing for trout, yeah.
Do you, Brad Paisley called last night, he said, do you fish with Huey Lewis?
I do.
And how is that? How is he? Huey was a big hero to you, is that right?
Was. Yeah, is still. Huey got me into fly fishing. I always loved to fish when I was a kid. Yeah. My band leader, Cleto, and his dad, both of whom are in my house band on the show, we'd go to Lake Mead, which is now you can fish for a human corpse. Because but we'd go to Lake Mead outside of Las Vegas, where I grew up, never catch anything. I mean, I think I caught one fish my whole childhood. And it turned out I had the line I had on my rod and reel was like 50-pound test weight. It was like it was as thick as a garden hose. You know, there's no chance I was catching a bass with that. But anyway, we go fishing, and then Huey was on the show.
Yeah,
and I always loved Huey Lewis, and I said, "He lives in Montana. What do you do in Montana?" And, you know, as people from the East Coast and Vegas will say to people from the Mountain West, like, what do you do up there?
Just nature.
He said, well, I like to golf, and I ride my horses, and I fish. I go fly fishing. I was like, oh, I've always wanted to try that because I saw a river runs through, and I read the book.
Yeah.
And he said, come up. I said, now, is this a real invitation, or is this one of those come up? Because I'm going to need a date. If you give me a date, I'll come up, but otherwise I won't come up. And so he gave me a date, and I brought I brought Chris Bianco and Adam Perry Lang up there, my band leader Cleto. We all went up and we stayed at Huey's place, and I just got really into I loved it immediately. It's something that I love to do. I find it to be meditative and something that really resets me. You know,
you work as hard as you do and have the same kind of
being in the city and whatever, outdoor and just listening to the river and focused on that little fly floating along.
You're not alone.
Henry Winkler just had on.
Yeah.
It was like I had relatives who were
says
disturbed.
The same thing.
I said, "Are you the top Jewish angler in the world?" He goes, "No, fishing is my religion." He said, "It really is that spiritual."
Have you gone with
Henry? And I fish in the same spot, actually, all the time.
Yeah,
we have not fished together yet. We're going to. We just missed each other the last couple of summers, but we talk about it all the time.
The sweetest.
And
the sweetest
guy he sent me some flies.
Oh, nice.
He tied. Yeah, yeah.
And I know Letterman likes to fish. Have you been with him?
No, Letterman. Letterman is. I think he's a wade fisherman. He likes to be out there wading by himself. Oh. I try not to bother Letterman because I think we have.
You could be a stalker.
Yeah, I don't want to. I just don't want to make him uncomfortable. So,
by the way, his last appearance on your show, which just happened in Brooklyn, was so good.
Yeah, that was great, right?
You guys are great together. I can see why he likes coming on the show. You don't have to really convince him to come, do you?
No, not at all. He's so nice.
And he is.
It boggles my mind, and especially my friends from high school, you know, because we loved this show. This was like it changed our sense of humor.
You would have themed birthdays.
Yeah.
Him.
For my 16th birthday, my mom got me a Late Night with David Letterman Letterman jacket that she had made at the sporting goods store.
Yeah.
And I was the only person who didn't work for the show that had one.
Do you have some of the jackets now?
Oh, yeah,
from
the Worldwide Pants.
Yeah, I worked for Worldwide Pants. They were producers on Raymond, so every year I got a jacket.
Yeah, I have a closet full of
them. And they got 20% of the show, right? Or something.
Yes, I got a jacket. Well. They got the millions. Yeah. Yeah. But
I love
don't him. You feel like he's gotten sweeter as a human being?
Well, I didn't know him beforehand, but yes, I do, by the accounts of people I know, yeah, for sure.
The birth of his son, the end of the pressure of having to do the show all the time. He just has mellowed. The beard is like almost like an embodiment of his changed view on life.
I think so. I think he would probably agree with that.
I mean, he's super sweet. No, I think.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. I mean, he's very he was complimentary of our staff afterward and singled people out and
great.
I mean, that's but it's crazy for me. I just sit and see him walk out.
I know.
I just start laughing. I don't know what it is, but when I introduce him and then he walks out, it just gives me a little laugh. Like, how did this happen? I was drawing pictures of him when I was in high school. All the time. I had Late Night with David Letterman, the chemistry book cover, Late Night with David Letterman, English literature. You know, it was just like a dumb thing that I would do. I made pins with his face on them. If I ever showed him all his crap, he'd probably never speak to me again.
The police.
It's disturbing. I don't know how I'd react to it.
I was trying to explain.
You had a hero. And look, you emulated him at the beginning. I think, and now you've become you, and now people are going to emulate you. He said it on the show. He's right.
Yeah, he was being nice. I don't think so.
Absolutely.
I was trying to explain his greatness to my kids, because there's a generation that doesn't realize how groundbreaking he was.
Yeah.
And to me, I tried to compare him to Sinatra, whereas, if you listen to all
that's
singing,
a reference the kids were really grasping. They really got that.
Come on, kids, you have to know who Frank Sinatra is. You have to know who David Letterman is, and you have
to
know who
Frank Sinatra Jr., so they would understand.
Do you, though? They'll never understand you. It doesn't matter how long, because it's like you hear whatever version of a song you hear first is the original version, no matter who wrote it, right?
It's true.
We think of My Way, we think of Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
It's Paul Anka's song, you know? But I think if you show them David Letterman's YouTube channel, have you been on that?
No.
Yeah, oh, it's great. They have everything.
You mentioned it on the show, but I have not.
Those bits hold up.
Yes, they do.
Unbelievably well.
Yep.
And I think that's all. Just turn them loose on that, because that'll tell them everything they need to know.
Do you think the kids have you shown the kids Star Wars?
Not yet, no.
I feel like if you were to show a kid Star Wars, and listeners, correct me if I'm wrong, if you show a kid Star Wars now, they go, big deal. Because everything surpassed it in terms of special effects. And
the pacing is really more than anything. My kids, I'll show them, I'm like, oh, we're going to watch Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah.
And it's 6 minutes of theme song and setup and, you know, establishing shots or whatever.
My kids are
like, all right, good night. I'm going to go play. You know, it's like, you know. Yeah,
my kids never wanted to see old movies. And by old, it was anything from before they were born.
Yeah.
Oh, it's heartbreaking. When I showed my kids Meatballs, because to me, Meatballs is like Citizen Kane of comedies in my memory. And then you try to watch it with a young, you know, teen at that point.
Meatballs was Citizen Kane for you?
It was.
Not the movie Meatballs.
The actual, the one the Meatballs we're having today.
There's an enormous pair of underpants for waving from the flagpole. And the pranks on Morty all the time. Oh, that's a great movie. Yeah.
It did not hold
I
up
love that movie. But I'm telling you, the Letterman bits hold up and your kids will like them.
And you're on YouTube hosting a couple of your favorites, right?
I did, yeah. That was hard, you know. They say, look, what are your favorite Letterman bits? I mean, I saw every show, you know, so like, oh my God, how can I? And I had to really think about it. And
do you have a couple of favorites, like absolute?
Yeah, there was a theme song they did called "It's a Late Night World."
Yeah,
it's a late night world of love where they were singing.
I remember that.
And there was a bouquet of flowers, and Dave just peeks his face through them. it doesn't sound funny, but it's fucking hysterical.
It's a character laugh.
Just Shades, Just Bulbs, where he goes into the Just Shades store and the Just Bulb store.
Do you remember the third anniversary show? When Larry Bud Melman was welcoming visitors.
Yes, to Port Authority. Yeah, and not understanding how microphones work.
I don't think I've ever laughed so hard in my life. Is that on your list of the YouTube ones?
I don't remember, but I don't think I did put that on the list because you have to watch the whole thing. If you watch even what they had on the third anniversary show, it's overly edited. When you watch this progression throughout the night of him checking in with Larry, and he's got the mic and he says, are you enjoying New York? And then halfway through his question, he moves the mic to their face. You can't hear the rest of his question.
And he kept getting it wrong every question.
Larry Bud Melman was so funny.
What a character to find.
Ugh.
You live for that, right?
To
find those people.
Howard Stern asked one of the great questions ever asked of David Letterman. And this was maybe 10 years ago at his big birthday party. He said, when Larry Bud Melman died, Calvert DeForest was the guy saying, did you go to the funeral? It's like, where the fuck did that question come from?
What was the answer?
The answer was no.
Of course not. He wouldn't go to his family's funeral.
He won't go to his own funeral.
Right. That's hilarious.
Howard Stern is not going to go fishing with you at any point, would he?
He won't fish, but he'll come. He'll come up,
He'll be the lodge buddy?
He loves that area because apparently when he was a kid, he was a camp counselor.
Uh-huh.
And they would go up there. Oh. And he has fond memories of it. So
yeah. Oh, okay. So many things. We didn't even get into the chefs.
Talk about the chefs that we love.
Chris Bianco. Where'd you meet him?
Met Chris Bianco at his restaurant in Phoenix. My parents were living in Phoenix. I read about him in the New York Times. I said to my dad, "How have you ever been to this place?" And he said, "No, I never have. I went to college in Phoenix." And I said, "Well, we've got to go there when I come back." So I went back at Christmas time, and Chris was closed. He closed over Christmas because he made all the pizzas. Right. And then the next year, I'm like, all right, we got to go. Closed again. And then the third year, I decided to come out before Christmas so we could go.
Yeah.
And I met Chris. He was, working the oven and confused as to why I was there or interested in him.
Yeah.
And I really liked him. And I was doing the San Gennaro Feast here in L.A. thing. And I said, do you want to come be on the show and cook at the San Gennaro Feast? Because I thought his pizza was great. And he's like, what would I do about the restaurant? I said, doesn't anyone else here know how to make pizza? And he said, yeah, they do. I go, all right, well, let them make pizzas one night. He's like, okay.
So he came out. He hadn't thought of that at all.
It had not occurred to
him. No, he made everything by himself.
It not occurred to him. He came out. We hit it off in a big way.
Yeah.
And we became very close friends. And Adam Perry Lang is somebody I met on the show. He had a barbecue place, Daisy Mays, in New York. And
I remember that.
Actually, my boss at ABC ate there, and he's like, this place is unbelievable.
Yeah.
You got to have this guy on the show.
Right.
So he booked him to come on the show. I didn't know who he was. He cooked roasted a whole pig in our parking lot, which, of course, horrified most of the women on the staff. But it was so good.
He's
and
a genius.
We became friends. And then I met a lot of all the other guys that I'm friendly with, like Mark Vetri. I met him at his restaurant in Philadelphia and just have one sweetest, of the best meals greatest. I ever had.
You and I are both very involved in Alex's Lemonade, which he...
And that's where I got to know a lot of these guys, yes. Through Alex's Lemonade. That's Suzanne Gowen, who I love, and Mark really organized here
in
LA.
Have you been to the Philly one?
I've not been to the Philly one.
I've got to go to that one.
Can you explain what that is, Alex's Lemonade?
It is it's an Alex's Lemonade stand. This little girl named Alex, I get upset when I talk about it.
Oh, you're so sweet. she had cancer and she wanted to help other kids. And she started a lemonade stand. And today they've made tens of millions of dollars.
Because continued of chefs like her parents Vetri. Continued it in her
and they're memory. so sweet the parents and everyone involved. Besides how great the cause is, it's probably the best food events in the country.
Absolutely
right.
It is.
You got to come with me to
it's
Philly.
The best charity event.
It is the best.
It's charity events are for charity and that's the point of them. This one's also
for you.
Great.
Yes. Yeah.
And you meet a lot of these chefs, and I love chefs in general because they are so,
nurturing.
Yeah, and ultimately they want to feed people.
Yes,
they want to do as good a job feeding people as they can.
Like Daniele,
and so there are a group of people who do a lot more charity work than anyone else, even comedians. It's like, hey, will you do this charity event? They were going to do that anyway at the Comedy Store that night,
But cooking is work.
Yeah, cooking is work. It's hard work, and it's a great group of people. David Chang is a good friend of mine, and Billy Durney, the barbecue guy, is in Brooklyn.
You know all the geniuses.
Yeah, I mean, I admire what they do.
Me too.
I know how much work they put into it and how much creativity.
And they're artists.
Yeah, and they're really special people.
That event in Vegas to keep memory alive for year after year, and it means a lot to me, because it's about Alzheimer's and it makes me think of my dad. You also get to see Neil Diamond, which is, I do that anyway. But you watch Wolfgang Puck, who runs that one, and he's just sort of like making 800 people or 1,000 people get served exactly on time.
He is an unbelievable person.
And
Wolfgang
he doesn't yell.
Puck.
He wasn't yelling. He was just sort of motivated.
As famous as he is, he's underrated as a chef. He's a great chef.
He told me a story. I don't know if you know this story, but this is one of the all-time great stories. Johnny Carson used to come into Spago. But Johnny would like to bring a pizza home.
Yeah.
And he asked Wolfgang to not cook it all the way, just cook it a little bit. And Wolfgang's like, I don't know. He's like, yeah, because I like to put them in the freezer and then cook them later. And Wolfgang was like, oh, my God, he's ruining my pizzas. I don't want him doing that. I'll bring it. He's like, no, I'll bring them to your house anytime. Don't worry, Johnny, whatever. Johnny says, no, just make me, just par cook them a little bit. And I put them in the freezer. And so Wolfgang said, let me see how this comes out. So he did it himself. He put it in his freezer and he put it back in the oven. He said, this is actually pretty good, and started selling frozen pizzas.
That's it. So Johnny, the reason there are Wolfgang Puck frozen pizzas is because of Johnny Carson.
Maybe even the reason there are high-end frozen pizzas in general are because
Daniele
of Johnny
has
Carson.
Them, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're very good.
You got to thank Johnny Carson.
Thank you, Johnny Carson.
You just re-upped for 3 years, so so you do enjoy hosting your show.
Yeah, I do. I like working with the people I work with.
Yes.
I like the people who run the network. I want to be on the air when Donald Trump goes to jail. I very much want
that. What a beautiful sentiment.
I think I would be heartbroken if I was
What's your gut tell you? And you know people. What do you think's going
to
happen?
My gut, first of all, I'm going to tell you, my gut always tells me the wrong thing.
Okay.
Like when it comes to Donald Trump. But I still believe, even after living through the OJ trial and whatever, that I still believe that justice triumphs in America. And I know there are a billion different examples to the contrary, but there just seem to be too many different cases against him. I mean, the guy is, how can you commit this many crimes and be this unethical? And be this you know, just this terrible and get away with it. I think the only way he's going to get away with it is if, you know, he has a heart attack or something. And that's the last we see of him. And I feel like in some ways that's what he's trying to do. He's just trying to draw this out until he dies.
Or until there's no democracy left. And
yeah, well, he's perfectly okay, I think, with that being the consequence of his actions to save himself.
This is what I mean by what you talk about on the show nightly is not politics. I'm sure you get crap from Trump supporters.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But this is beyond politics.
Yeah, this is just basic human decency. I mean,
you got it.
I wasn't a George Bush fan either, but I didn't go after him every night. And
you
whatever.
Didn't have to. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that at his core, he probably, I mean, obviously he made some mistakes, but they all do.
Yeah.
And this idea, I got to tell you what really burns my ass. And it's just Joe Biden. Look, I mean, whatever you think about him.
He's a decent human being.
He's a nice old man who cares, who quite plainly has cared about people through his whole life. And this idea that he's some kind of like demon, I mean, it's just like, it's such a stretch. You can't even believe it's like, you go like, what?
Yes.
Like, okay, what the fuck are you people talking about? I mean, you might disagree with him, but he's certainly not evil. I mean, if you believe that, you've got some real problems.
So these are extreme political views you have. And does ABC ever say to you, hey, could you not just attack this side and lay off a little bit because we're going to lose those people?
There was at one time, maybe, I don't know, like right around the beginning of this whole like Trump thing where
this is now 8 years ago.
Yeah. Something like that. Maybe not quite that long ago that was like kind of hinted at, but I said, listen, I get it. I mean, I don't disagree. I mean, you're right. I have lost half of my fam, maybe more than that. I mean, when I 10 years ago among like Republicans, I was the most popular talk show host, you know. I mean, you know, this, at least according to the research that they did, but, and I get it if that's what they want to do. I just said, listen, if that's what you want to do, I understand and I don't begrudge you for it, but I'm not going to do that. So, you know, if you want somebody else to host the show, then that's fine. That's okay with me. I'm just not going to do it like that. And they're like, all right.
Really?
Yeah.
They didn't.
No. Oh, they knew I was serious. I mean, you know, I couldn't live with myself. I see this, you know.
Well, you're doing a public service. You, Colbert, the Seth Meyers, these are the guys. You're the guys who make us feel like we're not alone.
Grandiose a way, but I do think, like, you know, I love this country too. I mean, that flag doesn't belong to them.
That's right.
This is ours. And when I see somebody coming in and ruining it, I'm going to say something about it. And that's it. That's as simple as that.
Well, I'm telling you, you don't have to put it that way, but I'm putting it that way. And I think a lot of people feel comforted knowing they're not alone. Where you don't think, oh, is it just me? Am I crazy? When you guys come out and you do this wonderful material that's funny and enlightening and
I feel
true.
Like that about my colleagues. I you know, when I see, you know, Steven and
yes,
you know,
but you're right there. You're doing
no,
it.
No, I feel like proud to be part of this group.
You should be.
Because I do think that there is, you know, there is a sacrifice that you make when it comes to your audience, you know.
Yeah.
And you could do pretty well if you just stayed right down the middle if you wanted to. But
are you surprised, like Trevor Noah, who I had a great time working with the last couple of years, when someone like that doesn't want to keep going forever? Like you clearly have done this. You're running the marathon and the shows is better than ever. But
no, it doesn't surprise me. It more surprises me that we do keep going because it's a hard, you know, it's a hard – I mean, it's not. We're not digging. Obviously, there are certainly jobs harder than ours, but it just takes your whole life over. You know, something you have to think about all the time, nonstop. Yeah. And I could see why. You know, stand-up comedy. It's other than the travel, it's an easier life. You know, and there's some wisdom to just enjoying your life. And also, Trevor Noah is, was not born in this country, so maybe he doesn't. you know, maybe he wants to go home, you know,
or anywhere else.
Yeah.
You heard it here. Jimmy Kimmel saying Trevor Noah should go home.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
The anti-immigrant bias of the Jimmy Kimmel show is really a problem.
Jimmy, we love you. I'm such a fan. I'm so proud. If I can be proud of you, I am.
Well, that's nice of you. I feel the same way, and I'm honored to be part of this. And I really am impressed by what you've done here. Is you've become like this beacon of food. I imagine, though, people are driving you crazy every time they go anywhere asking you where they should go.
No, I kind of like
it. But I also imagine you being nice enough to tell them.
I feel like I have a purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas before, I didn't really.
And it's and it's great to shine a light on these great chefs and this great food. And not even chefs, but even the little joints.
Yes,
you know?
Of course. They make the world better.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure. What's better than lunchtime?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Used to be the name of my production company. There you go. Lunch?
Where's lunch?
It's our main preoccupation in the writer's room.
Yep.
The only sunshine coming in is the menu.
That's right.
Jimmy Kimmel, everybody. David, do you want to say one more thing?
What about Aunt Linda? Does she listen to the podcast?
Yeah, she's not a fan.
All right, people. Jimmy Kimmel, thank you.
Thank you. That was fun. And the food was delicious. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Daniele. We have leftovers.
Naked Lunch is a podcast by Phil Rosenthal and David Wild. Theme song and music by Brad Paisley. Produced by Will Sterling. Executive produced by Phil Rosenthal, David Wild, and Josephine Marcherana. Engineering support by Brendan Burns. And our consulting journalist is Pamela Chellin. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a friend. But if you can't take my word for it, take Phil's.
And don't forget to leave a good rating and review. We like 5 stars, you know.
Thanks for listening to Naked Lunch, a Lucky Bastards and Stitcher production. Naked Lunch is a podcast by Phil Rosenthal and David Wild. Theme song and music by Brad Paisley. Produced by Will Sterling. Executive produced by Phil Rosenthal, David Wild, and Josephine Marcherana. Engineering support by Brendan Burns, and our consulting journalist is Pamela Chellin. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a friend. But if you can't take my word for it, take Phil's.
And don't forget to leave a good rating and review. We like 5 stars, you know.
Thanks for listening to Naked Lunch, a Lucky Bastards and Stitcher production.